Good morning, everyone. I'm John Myrie.
And I'm Art Malin.
And welcome to the Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. On this week's show, we're talking with Hayward Area Fishing Guide Steve Jensen down at Hayward Bait and Bottle. And then we've got an interesting interview with our local DNR fish biologist, Max Walter, talking about selective panfish harvest. Lots to cover on this week's show, all coming up right after these messages.
You want to get outdoors, you want to have some fun.
Springtime is the time to buy a new Polaris off-road vehicle from Hayward Power Sports. Right now, claim rebates up to $1,200 and financing as low as 2.99% during our spring sales event. Get more done and have more fun with a new Ranger XP 900 offering a $1,200 rebate. The Polaris Sportsman 570, the off-road's best-selling automatic ATV, is priced to move starting at under $6,000. Or race in for a Razor XP Turbo and grab a $500 rebate on the world's ultimate performance side-by-side. The Polaris Spring Sales Event is on with rebates up to $1,200 and financing as low as 2.99% APR for 36 months. Don't miss out. Come see us today at Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77, or online at haywardpowersports.com.
Offer valid in the U.S. through 4/30/18 on select new vehicles. Subject to credit approval, offers vary by model. See dealer for details. Always wear a helmet, never drink and ride.
Riding along in my automobile.
Bumping into things unexpectedly? Make your first choice for collision repair. Ernie's Auto Body, featuring the most advanced collision repair facility in northwest Wisconsin. With a state-of-the-art spray bake-down draft paint booth for that better-than-new finish, laser technology for precision frame alignment, loaner cars available, computerized estimates, written guarantees, and documented unmatched customer service, the clear choice is Ernie's Auto Body, south of Hayward on Highway 63 and Nursery Road, where quality is no accident.
Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering welcomes you to stop by for their great selection of mouth-watering steaks, as well as many varieties of brats, sausages, and much more. Along with that, Lynn's also has a variety of snack sticks, summer sausage, cheese curds, and homemade jerky, as well as great double-smoked bacon. Lynn's is open Mondays to Fridays from 9 to 5:30, Saturdays 9 to 4, and closed Sundays. Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering, next to Cooper's Family Restaurant in Hayward. We're recording this week's show down at Hayward Bait and Bottle, and you know, it looks like we're finally getting a break in the weather we've been waiting for. I saw someplace, Art, that it said that April was the coldest April on record ever.
Could be, but it's probably got the most snow, too.
Yeah, I don't know. We've got Steve Jensen in here, and I imagine you're just chomping at the bit, ready to go, too.
I am done with winter. I've been done with winter for a month now, and it just does not want to quit. But that's Mother Nature. Nothing we could do about it, but we are turning the corner. I just looked at the extended forecast this morning, and next 14 days, 50s and 60s.
Well, you know, we're a week ahead of time on this thing, but leading up to this, we still had some pretty good ice fishing. There were a few people still going on, but some people are just getting bored with it, I think.
Yeah, I honestly think that's the case, John. The fishing's still solid. There's places you can still sneak out onto, but honestly, we've been ice fishing for months and months and months. We're tired of it. We're sick of drilling holes, so bring on the melt.
By the time this airs, if you do go out there on the lake, you want to be real careful, because we'll be a week into the warm weather.
And yeah, start absolutely. It's going to change fast, and it's melting and disintegrating, even though it's been, you know, colder than normal. Ice this time of year starts to degrade, disintegrate, and you just got to be careful what you're doing. Springs and flow areas obviously are high risk areas, but you can't always see what's underneath it. So
I don't think LCO is going to be open. I don't think Round's going to be open. I'd be very surprised if some of the big deep lakes are open.
Yeah, I'll agree. And honestly, a week ago, I would have told you I didn't think any of the lakes were going to be open. But now looking at this forecast and just seeing what we have, a little bit of rain mixed in there, you know, I think we're going to be pretty solid as far as the flowages go. And probably some of our shallower, smaller lakes should be okay. But we don't know.
And that's kind of what I was saying all along, though, Steve.
We'll see what happens.
The thing that you want to do if you're going to get out there and fish is you want to go on the north side, the northern side of the water, because it's going to be the warmest. And wherever it's the warmest, that's where the fish are going to be.
Yeah, temperature gauge is a big thing.
Absolutely. And that's where, you know, the ice will leave first, for sure. And, you know, that's where the fish will find the first, too. And obviously, that's where you're going to want to target.
You know, speaking about open water, I mean, coming up to this, what do you hear about people on the rivers at all?
You know, there's been some guys getting out. The Brule, I think, has been a little bit lackluster so far due to the snow and the non-melting. The water is low and clear. That's certainly going to change here this week once we get this melt. I think the fish the guys are catching are resident fish that have been in there. I'm sure there's been a little bit of, you know, new fish coming in. But I honestly expect the steelhead to get much better here in the next week or two. I don't think it's been gangbusters, but the few guys going up have been catching fish. The other thing that's going on is catch and release trout. I know some guys doing well on browns. Namakagan being some of the other little streams around. Catch and release barbless until opener, so that's something you can do. And then another thing a lot of guys have been doing here the last few weeks is rough fishing, sucker and red horse. And we have a lot of great sucker and red horse fishing, lots of road accesses along the Namakagan, especially down towards Trigo and that way. But, you know, if a guy's itching to get out and wet a line, there's certainly some options.
Good option.
Yeah, you know, those fish don't taste bad if they're pickled.
Well, and honestly, the guys that I know are, they're making fish balls with them, they're making fish patties, they're smoking them, they're doing all kinds of good stuff, and they're shooting the good, and, you know, catch and release too. You're catching a red horse up to 30 inches, they fight like mad, it's a good time.
Steve, you had any reports on guys getting out trolling on the big lakes on Lake Superior? Because I've heard of guys out there already a week ago.
I haven't here, John, and I'm not saying that they're not doing it. I was up to Duluth the other day. The big lake is open, so there's certainly that option, but I have not heard any reports, so I can't give you a good, honest report of if they're catching fish. But that will certainly be an option, you know, if we do have too much ice for opener for guys to go up.
When you were up there, was the St. Louis open?
It was busting open. There were some pretty good holes in it, a lot of ice chunks floating. The mouths of both of the outlets were open, and then Superior was wide open. So
I know another one of the other guides told me that he talked to somebody that had been up there trolling that did quite well, but he didn't know exactly where he went in at, and he said there's got to be a landing someplace.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I don't think you would be able to get out of the landings that were right in St. Louis Bay. It probably would have had a bit of lake landing on the North Shore.
Yeah.
But I would say in the next few days here, that will certainly change.
Well, this was on the South Shore, too, and I know that he told me that the landing at Saxon Harbor was wide open, except it was a big ice chunk laying on the ramp.
That one is one of the earlier openers, and that would be your only problem if you get something blowing in there, but, you know, that could be hit or miss, and usually that stuff won't last. It'll blow right back out.
What kind of tips can you give guys that might want to try that if we have, you know, delayed ice out here and they want to go up there?
It's super easy fishing, John. It's planer board trolling, and it's shallow running stuff. You don't need to be deep. Dick-style minnow baits, husky jerks, rapalas, thunder sticks certainly work well. Small spoons can work well, too. Troll 1.5 to maybe up to 3 miles per hour. Spread your lines out. Get ready to pull in some coho browns and all kinds of stuff. It's pretty fun.
You never know.
You never know. Yeah, it's true. And you can get into some really, really good days, multiple fish days, and those coho are delicious. If you're into eating, you know, salmon and trout, they're wonderful.
Well, you got other fish up there, too, and the season's open on them, too. The season's open on walleye.
Yep, and you can run into a bonus walleye, giant pike, who knows, maybe an occasional muskie.
You know, Steve, you know, the other thing that's going is the turkey seasons, and, you know, that's going to be interesting this year because, man, I'll tell you what, as bad as the winter was, the turkeys seem to have survived.
They're everywhere, John. We really have seen the turkey population boom, I would say, in the last 3 years, personally, from what I've seen. And it's everywhere. You go all the way out into the National Forest, 80 miles going east or 70 miles going west, there's birds everywhere. And seeing a lot of them in the roads right now, I think, because it's open and there's some gravel and a little bit of grass exposed. But seeing quite a few birds in my area up by Springbrook, and actually seeing a few displaying and hanging around some hens. So we'll see. The problem for their hunters is going to be the snow to deal with here for a few days, but that could go away pretty fast too.
The other thing that's unusual is the deer population is in relatively good health, and I can't hardly believe that.
Yeah, they're doing good. You know, Art, and, you know, a lot of that is supplemental feeding. We got a lot of people doing that, and the winter wasn't overly horrible until these last 2 months. So, you know, I think they were going into it okay. And now that it's breaking, they're certainly looking a little skinny, a little rough. But, you know, if they've made it this far, most likely they're going to make it through.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have to take a break right now. And, Steve, if you don't mind sticking around here, I'd like to get you in the last part of the show here, too. But we're going to take a break right now and hear from some of our fine sponsors. When we come back, I've got a little interview with our local fisheries biologist, Max Walter. And then we'll finish up the show with Steve. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one stop for the Hayward area's largest selection of rods, reels, lures, fishing electronics, boating supplies, and much more. Whether you fish for bass, walleyes, panfish, or muskies, gear up for the upcoming fishing season, and if you're getting ready for the spring turkey season too, they also have just about everything you'll need for a successful season. In the bottle shop, you'll find a full selection of beer and liquor. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one stop sport and bottle shop.
The Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau in Sawyer County, Wisconsin welcomes you to our Northwoods hometown. No matter the season, no matter the activity, you'll always be surrounded by our great outdoors. What more could you ask for in a vacation destination? Woods, waters, world-class events. Contact us for information on lodging, dining, attractions, events, trail conditions, and more, order your free vacation guide, and start planning your getaway today. Visit us at haywardlakes.com or call 1-800-724-2992.
Can-Am machines are designed to make your heart race. And now they're available at heart-stopping prices. For a limited time, get up to a $2,000 rebate on select 2018 models, like the thrilling Maverick X3, the all-enduring Defender, and the heavy-duty Outlander. Spring fever ends April 30th, so head to Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
Certain restrictions apply. Subject to credit approval. See your dealer for details or find them online at haywardpowersports.com.
Welcome back to another segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors with myself, John Myrie, and co-host Art Mielen. And, you know, guys, we're talking about things. Selective harvest has been kind of a hot-button issue here with the DNR and everybody else when it comes to pan-fishing crappies, Art.
Yeah, that's true. And if we don't start doing it, quite frankly, I don't think we're going to have the kind of population we're going to be liking in the future. We got to do something about selectively taking what you're going to keep and don't take it outside that. In other words, don't take the big ones.
Yep, you bet. Let's hear what Max had to say about that. And when we come back, we'll have another talk with Steve here. We're down at the Wisconsin DNR headquarters here in Hayward, and we're talking to our fish biologist, Max Walter. And Max, good morning for being on here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We're talking about a couple of different things, and one is panfish. We've talked about this a number of times, especially our panfish. And those of us that have been up here a long time, we've seen a slow degradation of the size structure of our panfish in a lot of lakes. And a lot of that is due to just pure and simple angler harvest. A lot of it is, isn't it?
Yep, yeah, and you know, this is one thing where angler observations completely line up with DNR data. A lot of anglers say, yeah, the panfish size has been getting smaller, whether they're talking about bluegill or crappies, and we have data that shows that, yes, that is in fact the case. The size has been kind of gradually declining over many decades, but the average has dropped.
We're going to talk about size of fish. What fish should we keep or harvest? Obviously, we're looking at a lot of bag limits now where you allow 10 crappies or 10, you know, panfish. And even more restrictive than that in some places. But when you're looking at the size structure of the fish, it's important to look at what size fish you're keeping sometimes, depending on what you're catching. Because I know, personally, I know other people outside don't keep crappies unless they're 10, 12 inches. That, in fact, may be the wrong attitude to have on it, right?
Right. And that's the kind of the mentality that we're trying to educate people about is, you know, if you put a cap on your harvest, whether it's 8 inches for bluegill or 10 inches for crappies, those are probably the sizes I hear most common. It's hurting the population in the long run. You're taking out only the largest individuals that might be the fastest growing individuals, and you're kind of creating a cap on what the size is going to be going forward. So what we recommend is, you know, harvest based on the sizes of what you're catching and try and take more of those more common 8, 9 inch crappies, might be some 6.5, 7, 7.5 inch bluegill. But what you're going to be doing by harvesting that way is reducing competition among those panfish that are at the most common sizes. And that should, in the long run, lead to faster growth. And you will actually be catching more big panfish in the future than if you were capping your harvest at a certain minimum size.
Well, yeah, you know, and you're actually, it takes a lot of years for those fish to get to the 10, 12 inches.
It does. It takes a shocking amount of time for some people. A 10-inch bluegill is almost certainly over a decade old in northern Wisconsin.
Wow.
There may be some places where they're growing faster where you can get them there a little quicker, but it's not an overnight thing. And when you're looking at crappies, it's not that much different. A 12-inch crappie is typically going to be between 8 to 12 years old. So it takes us almost a decade to get that high-quality fish. I think that helps inform people about, you know, kind of how long it takes to rebuild good size once it's lost.
Well, you know, especially bluegills. You're talking about bluegills. And something I picked up on from over in Minnesota and from another pro guide I know over there is that bluegills are a little bit different. The way I understand it, the big 10-inch male or billed bluegills, they're males. The big bluegills are males, where the big crappies are the females, but the males and the bluegills are the big ones. And according to what I pick up, I don't know, you tell me if I'm correct, those big males actually dictate the whole hierarchy of the size structure of the lake, and they keep the small males off the beds from the females. And basically, when you take them out, you wind up with a lake full of little bluegills.
Yes, that's the case.
That's the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah. Big big bluegill are typically males. Crappies grow at a more similar rate, so the male-female difference isn't as great. But bluegill have a really interesting kind of social hierarchy, just like you mentioned, where it is those big males that are the ones that earn the right to spawn. It's almost like bull elk. You know, they're the ones that are in charge, and they're kind of controlling things. And what that does is it creates a situation where the younger males are going to continue growing and putting energy into growth instead of putting energy into into reproduction. So when you have that big male bluegill out there, he's kind of motivating all the other males, hey, I got to get big. I want to be as big as that guy if I want to be able to spawn. And so that's kind of how it works as far as promoting good size. When you let the big ones go, you're going to promote more good growth.
Oh boy, that's interesting. And something more to think about when we're out there fishing, because you know, it's obvious it's worked with bass fishing, it's worked with muskie fishing, catch and release and selective harvest. I'm not much harvest on muskies at all.
No.
It's going to work if we start practicing more on bluegills, panfish, crappies, and even walleyes.
Yeah, and for the longest time, we were just kind of overlooking bluegills and panfish, and we weren't doing a lot of active management. You know, we had high bag limits for a long time. There was a period of time in the 60s where we didn't have a bag limit at all for panfish in Wisconsin. And, you know, we're finding out that we can manage them and we can get better size. We can meet angler expectations for size without being super restrictive. I mean, we're still, in almost all cases, having bag limits that are going to allow you to take home a good mess of fish, or at minimum a meal, right? So that's the idea, is use those bag limits where they're needed, where we can improve size, and educate anglers about what they can do on their side of things.
Yeah, contrary to what I've heard told me many, many times, it's not that the lake is stunted with a bunch of fish that don't grow. They'll grow, but you'd have to watch what's harvested, because they're not in the lake long enough to grow.
Yeah, true stunting is fairly rare, and it's usually something related to habitat and predators. And so, you know, that's something we'll work on the DNR side, but you know, the harvest side of things is typically what results in a smaller average size in panfish.
Max, been a very interesting thing. I want to thank you for coming on here.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, Max was interesting. We need to take another break right now and come back. We hear from more of our sponsors, and we come back, we have more on Your Outdoors.
Check out OC Outfitters for all your fishing, hunting, and camping needs this year. They're ready to get you out on the lake with everything from rods and reels to licenses and live bait. Come see their Columbia clothing for men, women, and children. They have a full line of shirts, rain gear, shorts, and jackets, and they have new rifles, shotguns, and handguns to choose from. New this season, a propane filling station. That's OC Outfitters, 4 miles east of Hayward on Highway B, open 7 days a week. Phone 715-634-1044.
The most common bills you can't prepare for are vehicle repairs and medical expenses. Quick Check and Hayward is here to help when you're a little short. Get the cash you need today when the unexpected happens between paydays. Keep your utilities on. Avoid late fees and overdraft charges. When there's too much month at the end of your money, Quick Check is the safe, secure, and easy way to get you the emergency funds you need. Quick Check, next to Hayward Bait and Tackle. 715-634-9753.
Pet owners, blastomycosis is a serious disease that threatens dogs in our area. Blasto is a fungus that grows in the spring and fall when the soil temperature is 39 degrees. The fatal disease results just 6 to 12 weeks later. Unfortunately, dogs love to dig and sniff in just the type of soil that houses these fungal spores. At Hayward Animal Hospital, they urge you to prevent your dogs from entering swampy areas during the thaw. If you have questions, call the Hayward Animal Hospital at 634-8971, located east of Hayward on Highway B.
Welcome back to the last segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. And myself, John Mayrie, and co-host is Art Malin today. And he's back again, and we'll be here all summer long, hopefully. We got Steve Jensen on here. And Steve, you know, we were talking earlier about that selective harvesting. And that is a big thing we really need to work on, because too many people want to handpick and take the biggest panfish.
Yeah, absolutely, John. And obviously, in our area, panfishing, it's big. It's probably our biggest portion of what people like to do, especially in the winter. But it happens all through the summer, too. And we do have a lot of harvest here. And it's significant. And obviously, on some of the bigger lakes, your management is going to be different than on some of your smaller lakes. And you're also going to see that these populations are very cyclic due to Mother Nature, things that we can't control no matter what we do as far as harvest goes. So you have that factor. Not an easy job for these biologists to figure out just how to manage that.
The thing that's a little different right now is Max has the ability to get things done quickly. In the past, it's taken about 5 to 6 years to get anything changed. But Max has got a way around that, and I like it.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. RT is a super progressive, and once he figures out what he wants to get done, he gets it done, he instruments it, gets the right people to help him out, and he's been very, very, he's awesome for our area. You know, I know you guys would agree, he's very go-getter, he's on our side on almost all things, and he's working very hard for us.
You know, Steve, one thing I've been talking about for quite a while now, and there's more and more guys doing it, I hear a lot of people in the outdoor media that are doing it, is that we need to start thinking about, you know, how we can do things to help increase the better size of the population of crappies and bluegills too, because, you know, there are a lot of guys. I've even run into guides that tell me, I don't keep them unless they're 10 or 11 inches long, you know. And we got to get past that thinking, because if we want to do something, we can get it done much quicker than what the DNR is, just by trying to think about what we're doing and how we're going to harvest fish or not harvest.
Well, self-regulation, John. I'm a muskie guy. We have self-regulated ourselves into catch and release many, many years ago, and how we handle the fish. That kind of mentality and that respect for the fish that you fish is really starting to translate across all species, including bass and walleye and panfish. But I will agree, there are certain guides that, and I hear them in here, and of course you don't want to start an argument, they won't keep them unless they're 11 inches, and they're only keeping them the 11s and 12s. And the reality is you should be keeping your 9s and 10s and letting those 11s and 12s go. It's simple biology. We've been proven there's enough, you know, studies and things like that to prove it. But, you know, I think people have that ego thing, whatever it may be. You got to have bigger and better, and you're not good if you're keeping the little ones. You got to keep the big ones. But biologically, for the management of the system, that's quite the opposite.
My experience is with the older fishermen, have a tendency to want to keep everything.
Yeah.
And that's just a part of the society.
Absolutely. And I do get that because, you know, my grandpa went through Great Depression. There was a time where, you know, they kept and killed everything that they caught because they absolutely needed it. And I kind of saw that in my father because that's how he was taught and that's how he was raised. And it took me many years to get him to release a 20-inch walleye. And now he does it willingly because he understands it. And it's just a matter of getting over that, what you have been taught, that mental concept that you have in your brain. And when you realize, you know, we're good enough at catching fish that we don't need to keep everyone we catch anymore. And there's enough fish that we don't need to catch everyone keep everyone that we catch anymore. And he's really, you know, progressed. And a lot of old timers have, but you still have, you know, a certain significant population that he doesn't have anybody else teaching them something different or something new, and you know, they're going to be stuck in their ways.
Too easy to blame anything and everybody else for the fact that we'd have small panfish or we don't have a lot of walleyes. It was whether it was the eagles got them or the wolves ate them, it was they're stunted. There's something else to blame except for, hey, I kept too doggone many big ones and put them in my freezer.
True story. It's never our fault. In reality, a lot of times it is. But, you know, it's such a complex issue and so many variables and so many things that go on. And in our area, Mother Nature is certainly a factor too. So not an easy gig, but we're figuring it out. And hopefully everybody's paying attention and trying to progress.
Yeah, Steve, it's interesting. I hope you're starting to get ready or really ready for the summer because we're going to find out.
It's been hard to get motivated to get stuff out and get all our gear ready with the way the weather's been. But it's time now. We got a couple of weeks. We got to get her going.
Yep, because we're going to be right to the walls. But anyway, I want to give out your guide information.
You bet. If anybody wants to get out fishing this summer, you can get me at fishhunts.com or on my cell at 715-558-3709. You can always stop down here at Hayward Bait and Bottle. We have information for all the local area guides, John, so we can certainly get you set up.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is people, if they're looking for a big group, if it's a company thing or something, there's always a bunch of us guides that can put together something for that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We can handle corporate outings. I can handle stuff up to as many as 10 to 15 boats. So we can certainly handle any group, and I love getting people out on the water and teaching them about the great sport of fishing.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yep, you bet.
Art, you know, we're going to wrap up the show here talking about a couple things. You had some stuff to talk about on the Conservation Congress hearings.
Well, you know, I was kind of curious about the Conservation Congress meeting a couple weeks ago, John. I found out that this year, 36% more people got involved, and I couldn't understand what was it that got them there. It was three items: group hunting, chronic wasting disease, and crossbows. Now, those are kind of interesting issues, and they brought out, as I understand, in the last 30 years, this was the highest number of people that came out. The real highest one was when they were going to take care of feral cats.
So it's interesting.
That's darned interesting. The other thing that's interesting to me is that 31 counties have chronic wasting disease, and I didn't realize it was in 31 counties. There are only 72 counties in the state.
I didn't realize that either.
I didn't know that until I started checking out some of the information that was coming out from the DNR. And if you're interested in what's happened at the meeting, just go to the DNR's website, go to Wisconsin Conservation Congress, and look for the results of the 2018 meetings.
And one question, when the heck are they going to crack down on these deer farms? Because it's 100%, from what I understand, coming from deer farms.
It's tough. It's an economic situation. It's a political situation. I don't like deer farms at all because that's where the majority of CWD is coming from. There's no two ways around it. I mean, there just is no two ways around it.
I know there was some talk even of things about scent, like doe urine being a factor.
That was the thing that almost blew me away at our last meeting. Can that really happen? Can the prions be transferred in deer urine?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That'd be bad because then we, you know, but there are alternatives to scent too. So it was an interesting meeting.
The other thing that's interesting to me, John, is that your tribe has declared 53,281 walleyes this year. Now, last year they took 38,991, which was pretty high. But this year I think it's going to be down significantly because the minute that ice goes out, John, they're going to spawn.
How many did declare, though?
They declared 53,281.
Yeah, and the ice being late is going to really affect them.
But they never spear that amount.
Yeah, I know that. And, you know, talking about a couple other things, too, you know, is that, you know, time to start getting things ready if you aren't and getting things done. And, you know, I was going to talk a little bit about electronics on boats, you know, rigging that depth finder. You get a new depth finder, if you take it, like, to Hayward Power Sports, rig it there, or you talk to somebody that knows how to rig it, you're going to get it put on there, right? But it's one of those things, you put it on there, there's some factors that you have to be aware of. One, the placement of that transducer, where you put it on the back of that boat, will make all the difference whether you're happy with the unit or not sometimes.
And when you talk about that, why is that? What happens?
Well, you get turbulence from the bottom of the boat. You get prop wash back from the motor. There's a whole bunch of other reasons. And of course, the depth, it'll quit working at high speed. I find that when I rig my Hummingbird stuff up, I always rig it on an extra plate in the back so I don't drill a whole bunch of holes in the boat, so I can move it if I have to. You can buy the transducer mounting plates and running the new transducers, like on the new Hummingbird side imaging. Those transducers are pretty big, and in the case of the side imaging ones, the best way to do it is actually to mount two transducers, one for high speed and use a Y cable in there, and then split, and for the side imaging, you leave it up out of the water where it's not going to get damaged by stumps or logs or something mm-hmm. when you run across the lake. But the other thing a lot of people overlook is using a heavy gauge wire to power the thing. If you're running too light a wire, they take quite a bit of power, and you run too light a wire, then you'll get this thing where you'll go to start the boat and the depth finder goes dead and you got to restart the depth finder. So there's a lot of factors involved in rigging that equipment up when you get a new depth finder.
Where would you suggest I go, John, if I had some concerns about that locally?
Well, probably the one place, one of our sponsors, Hayward Power Sports, rigs hundreds of those things a year. They got a ton of new Hummingbird stuff in stock, as Hayward Bait here does too, has a bunch of stuff in stock. But either one of those places, but as far as installing it, Hayward Power Sports is a good place too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, talking about one other thing too, as we wrap up the show here, remind people, if you're looking for some advertising that's good and inexpensive, give me a call, because we're running on the show here. We run on podcasts. We run Saturday, Sunday on podcast channel, on the YouTube channel. We got links back to your websites on there. And the show, a lot of people might not realize this, but the Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Show is totally independently produced in our studio. We send it electronically to the radio station to air it.
Yeah, now think about it. If you have something you want to advertise locally, it's easy to do, and it's pretty reasonable, John.
You bet it is. Anyway, we're out of time for this week. I want to remind folks, if you miss a show, you can get that show on our website at wnoradio.net. From there, you can link through to our podcast channel if you miss a show, because we put that up in the middle of the week. Or you can get to our YouTube channel. So anyway, we're out of time for this week.
Try to get some youngster to go with you when the fishing season opens up this year. You might have fun.
Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll be back again next week with another interesting show.
Come on along, listen with me. I'm gonna take you there to our Wisconsin outdoors, our Wisconsin outdoors.
This program has been produced and hosted entirely by Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Communications. Any and all views expressed are not necessarily those of the station.